Our fifth case for argument today is United States against Harris. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please this court, counsel, we are asking that you reverse the district court's order, which found that the officer's frisk of Mr. Harris, Collins Harris, was not in violation of Mr. Harris's Fourth Amendment right for the following reason. The officer's frisk of Mr. Harris was not supported by a reasonable suspicion that Mr. Harris was armed and dangerous. On October 8, 2004, an unidentified woman called 911 regarding a gunshot heard in the area. The woman's husband said that he saw a black male wearing blue jeans and a red shirt going into a house, a residence at 2005 Northmoreland, with a gun. That approximately 2 minutes later, the officer was dispatched to the area, and the officer arrived about a minute later. Officer Trancato arrived, and he sees a black male, later identified as Mr. Harris, coming from between the house at 2005 Moreland. He's coming from between the house, and he's going onto the porch at that address, knocking on the door. As he's exiting the porch, the officer approaches Mr. Harris and asks Mr. Harris if he knew anything about the gunshots found in the area. Mr. Harris replied that he did not. At that time, the officer takes Mr. Harris, has him put his hand on top of the vehicle, on top of the car, and pats him down.
Well, wasn't there some conversation? Was there any conversation, any further conversation? I know there were some observations the officer made before the pat down. He said that Harris wouldn't look at him in the eye. He was agitated. He was moving around.
Your Honor, the record indicates that the only conversation between Officer Trancato and Mr. Harris was when prior to the pat down was that the officer asked Mr. Harris whether or not he knew anything about the gunshots in the area, and Mr. Harris said that he didn't know anything. And then the officer also noted the observations that you just indicated. Then he was asked to put his hands on the car for the pat-down search. There was no other conversation at that time. When the officer patted Mr. Harris down, he felt what he believed to be bullets, asked Mr. Harris whether or not those were in fact bullets in his car. In his pocket. And at that time, Mr. Harris indicated that they were bullets. He reached in Mr. Harris's pocket and retrieved the bullets. Terry versus Ohio, which I'm sure this court is well aware and very familiar with, allows the officer to conduct a brief investigatory stop if he feels that is reasonable. And we're not contesting that the stop, the actual conversation that the officer had with Mr. Harris, was unreasonable. However, in order for that officer to continue to a pat-down search, he must have an additional reasonable suspicion, and that reasonable suspicion is that Mr. Harris is, in fact, armed and dangerous. We, of course, concede that the officer did not have that reasonable suspicion at that time. The only indicators in the record, if I could take a step back, the indicator in the record indicates there was a black male, very vague description, no height, no weight, no skin tone, no hairstyle, no other description other than a black male in blue jeans and a red shirt was seen heading into the residence. Mr. Harris did not have on a red shirt. Mr. Harris was wearing blue jeans, and he did not have on a shirt at that time. He was seen going, and he was seen approaching the 2005 Northmoreland address. The other indicator that was that happened at the dispatch was that the gentleman was seen approximately 2 minutes before, two and a half minutes prior to the officer's arrival, entering into the 2005 Northmoreland address. Now, when the officer arrived after the dispatch, approximately a minute after the dispatch called for an officer to the scene, Mr. Harris was approaching that address. He was approaching that address and knocking on the door. Mr. Harris was a visitor at there. He was coming to visit. It clearly indicates that there are two different people. You know, here there's one person who was described in the dispatch call from the 911 caller, which is the black male with the red shirt and blue jeans that had already entered the 2005 Moreland address. And then there's also a second person who is Mr. Harris. He's the person who was approaching that address some 3 minutes later as a visitor who was knocking on the door at the time the officer came to that residence. Now, the fact that Mr. Harris elected to have conversation with the officer does not then automatically subject him to the pat-down search. The case law is quite the contrary. He must have a reasonable belief that Mr. Harris is armed and dangerous. It simply doesn't exist. The fact that Mr. Harris was described as being nervous and avoiding eye contact in and of itself, per United States of America versus Mitchell, does not in and of itself indicate that...
What's with this in and of itself business?
Well...
One of the things we are told in these inescapable decisions is precisely not to evaluate circumstances in and of themselves. It's supposed to be done on a totality basis, all of them together, not any one aspect of them independently.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So
we are,
suppose we do it all together.
That is correct, Your Honor. We do look at the totality of the circumstances in a case, and in this particular situation, if we take the totality, what we have is a black male that does not match the description that the caller made, who simply was avoiding eye contact and was somewhat nervous when an officer was speaking with him. He was not trying to escape the officer. He engaged in that conversation willingly. He was not making any gestures that indicated that he was reaching for any type of weapon. There's absolutely nothing in the record aside from the fact that the officer was sent to this particular residence for a call and that the officer encountered a black male that did not match the description that the caller made. It also the fact that Mr. Harris was approaching the residence is a huge factor. The caller said that the person who had the gun, they saw that person go into the residence. They didn't say they saw the person wandering around outside the residence. There was nothing to that effect. The person who they saw with the gun was inside the residence. The officer indicated from his communication with the other assisting officer that he saw Mr. Harris come from between the houses and that Mr. Harris was knocking on the door. That clearly is not the same person. It's not the same person that was described in the 911 call. I think the other, major fact is that Mr. Harris was not... did not match the description, and the description was so vague that at a minimum, if we are going to say that due to the fact that the call was for gunshots fired, that at a minimum, if that's going to be the basis that we allow the officer to pat down Mr. Harris, that he should have at a minimum matched that description, and he did not. The frisk was solely done based upon the fact that Mr. Harris was a black male wearing a pair of blue jeans and was knocking on the door. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time. It's an unfortunate circumstance more than anything. And once again, his demeanor was one where he was willingly talking to the officer. The officer said he was cooperative in the record. There was nothing that indicated that Mr. Harris was uncooperative. There was something that indicated that perhaps he was nervous, but sometimes people are nervous when they talk to police. They're nervous when they talk to officers. That doesn't indicate anything other than the fact that maybe the person's nervous or maybe they're shy. Some people just aren't very good with eye contact, and others are better with it, but it doesn't indicate that the person was armed and or dangerous. And based upon the fact that the officer had no reasonable suspicion to believe that Mr. Harris was armed or dangerous, we respectfully ask that this court reverse the district court's finding that Mr. Harris's Fourth Amendment rights were not violated. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Scott. Mr. Warden.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is James Warden. I'm an assistant United States attorney. I represent the government today, as I did before the district court. Counsel for Mr. Harris has identified the standard, which, of course, drives the assessment today. And critical in that assessment, of course, is the language from the Terry versus Ohio case, which clearly governs the analysis that this court must now make. The focus of that holding as to these facts is whether or not Officer Trincato was justified in believing that Mr. Harris, whom he was investigating, at close range, as Terry suggests, was at that time armed and presently dangerous? And if so, under these circumstances, the limited pat-down frisk that he conducted was authorized as an exception to the Fourth Amendment requirement. Clearly the facts before Officer Trincado, the totality of those circumstances, as Judge Easterbrook suggested, put him in a situation which he was justified in believing that for his own safety, this brief frisk was appropriate. There's some factual disputes that were suggested by Harris through his counsel today that I think need to be clarified as part of my analysis, the government's analysis of those facts briefly, and that is that Officer Trincado testified that when he arrived at the scene, which was 1 minute after he received the dispatch, that the man who later was identified as the defendant, Harris, was on the porch of the exact address he was sent to, walking away from the porch, not between the houses. That was a ruse the defense raised because that was written in another officer's report. But Officer Trincado said clearly he saw Harris on the porch of that house walking away. He was the only person on that property, the only person at that house, and he does fit the description. He didn't have on a red shirt. There's no dispute about that. But that doesn't make it inconsistent. He was a black male. He was wearing blue jeans. He was there a minute after the officer was called. Clearly, it's logical. It's reasonable for the officer to approach Mr. Harris. Now, counsel also suggested some language that was in the 911 call, and that is in the record, but that information wasn't given to Officer Trincado. He didn't know what the woman who made the call said to the police dispatcher. What Officer Trincado knew, and this is also clearly in the record, was there were shots fired at 2005 Northmoreland. So he went to 2005 Northmoreland, and the dispatcher said that a black male in a red shirt and blue jeans had gone into the house. So when the officer gets there a minute later and sees a black male in blue jeans walking out of the house, clearly it's appropriate for him to approach him. I have outlined in the brief the other facts that are before the court, which the government believes clearly justify this frisk. The Mitchell case, which I cited, is very close in facts, and I would bring that again to the court's attention. Also, the behavior of Harris clearly lent itself to the officer's suspicion. The fact that Harris was evasive, appeared very nervous, would not make eye contact with the officer is one of the factors that the officer can consider in justifying the frisk that took place here. The fact that Harris denied any knowledge of hearing shots fired when the officer arrived within a minute of the call also indicates that Harris is being less than forthright with the officer. So based upon the totality of the circumstances here, it's the government's position that clearly the officer was justified in his suspicion and his belief that he was presently in danger from a person who was involved in criminal activity and was presently armed and dangerous. Unless the court has any questions, I will rest otherwise on the brief. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Scott, anything further?
May it please this court, Mr. U.S. Attorney is absolutely correct, and the crux is that it's whether or not the officer was justified in believing that Mr. Harris was armed and dangerous. There are no specific and articulable facts that indicate that the officer believed that Mr. Harris was armed and dangerous. As for the factual disputes and the so-called ruse that the defense counsel raised initially, that's absolutely incorrect. Officer Trincado, although he was the initial officer on the scene and had the opportunity to write a report, chose not to. He elected to come and testify based solely on his memory. However, the officer that did write the report immediately after this incident happened indicated that Officer Trincado specifically told him that this man was coming from between the houses, approached on went onto the porch and knocked on the door. That is his testimony. He also said that he saw him attempting to exit the porch, probably after he knocked on the door and did not get an answer. It was reasonable of the officer to approach Mr. Harris. However, it was not reasonable of the officer to pat him down based upon the fact that he did not have any reasonable suspicion and could not state any articulable reasons that Mr. Harris was that he believed that Mr. Harris was armed and dangerous. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Scott. And again, let me repeat my welcome to you to our bar. We look forward to seeing you again. The case is taken under advisement.